Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine, and I am here with
Terry D. Kester, the Doctor of Democracy.
And also, I believe I am now here with
Let the Pigeons Loose. It's
Garland. Garland Nixon, you are on the air.
If you don't have doves, pigeons will do, or balloons or something.
I assume you mean that we're celebrating the inauguration of our president.
Yeah, that's it.
I think Garland was just trying to send a message by pigeon.
Oh, is that what? Maybe that was some secret radio message. I don't know. Let the pigeons loose. President Obama, 5 minutes ago, gentlemen, was just re-inaugurated as a new president. Well, a new old former, I don't know, how do you even say that?
Continuing president.
A continuing president. His second term has begun. And I got to tell you, if I were a Republican, I would say it's been 5 minutes and he's already failed in his second term. But I'm a Democrat, so I still have hope for the next 4 years minus 5 minutes. For those of you who don't know and are wondering, wait a minute, did I miss something? There's still the big public inauguration tomorrow. Under the Constitution, January 20th at noon is the official time when the presidency ends and begins. So any day of the week, a new president has got to say the oath of office at noon on January 20th. But because January 20th this year is a Sunday, namely today, 5 minutes ago, it was a very private ceremony with just his family and the Chief Justice, and he's going to be doing it all over again before a million of his closest friends tomorrow. And I'm going to be there, and Garland's going to wimp out. Right, Garland?
Yeah, but Mark, you know what? That begs the question. A question that must be asked, and I'm sure you've got the answer.
I'm listening.
What happens if he doesn't? What happens if, for some reason, what happens if the president was supposed to do it today and he fell ill and for whatever reason he couldn't and he woke up at 12:01 and he hadn't done it? Do we have another election? What would happen?
No, Paul Ryan takes over.
Holy crap. Well, then I'm surprised they didn't try to kidnap him for 24 hours.
I think Al Haig takes over and it says he's in charge. The way it works, actually, is they have the vice president. This is actually a good question, Garland. The Constitution simply says the term ends at January 20th, but it also says the president must say the oath of office. So one of the things that they've done for years now is they have the vice president elect, and in this case it's the same vice president, but if it were a new one. But either way, Vice President Biden took his oath at 11:30, and they've been doing that now for, well, I guess five decades. It's a great question. The vice president takes the oath of office, the new one, at 11:30. And so if something happens to the president, then Biden would have been our president for a few minutes until Obama could take the oath. Now, if the president and the vice president both fail to take their oaths, and then Speaker Boehner, third in line to the presidency, who's already taken his oath because he's been around since his term began January 3rd. That's when Congress begins, January 3rd.
Well, he took his oath to Grover Norquist.
Well, that's true.
Yes,
but
did most Republicans.
That's all true. But interesting question, because actually you're absolutely right. If Obama had not taken the oath, Biden would have been president or acting president until Obama could take his oath. And if neither Obama nor Biden had taken their oath, then the Speaker of the House, who has been in charge for the last 17 days, would be President of the United States. So there's
your
question.
I hope their clocks were on time.
Are you surprised? I actually had an answer for you, Garland?
Well, I'm shocked. Yeah, and my suspicion is that John Boehner would have immediately outlawed all other parties and invaded Poland.
Yes, it's particularly the invasion of Poland. That's quite important. So, gentlemen, it is the inauguration. Yay! I'm going to be standing out there. Terry has an excuse. He's going to be all the way on the West Coast.
Yeah, but I might make it. I mean, Air Force One has called me, and we'll see what happens.
Really?
Yeah.
Really? I think that may just be a ruse to get you outside so they can arrest you, Terry.
Yeah, I think
you think it's Dick Cheney again?
He is out to get you and the rest of us. But I'm in town, and I'm going to be standing out in the cold, and I'm going to be watching the president speak the second inaugural address. Now, I'll mostly be watching on the Jumbotrons, because the actual president will be, you know, smaller than the tip of my finger. It'll be this little speck in the distance. But nonetheless, I'm going to be there with my fellow Americans. Garland, what's your excuse?
I've got to change the battery in my riding lawnmower.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I'd be there, guys.
Apparently, Garland does not like the cold.
Well, that's an understatement.
So, yes, I'm weathering the crowds and the cold.
But we're on the air, so we can't use the kind of language that I would use if I described how I feel about the cold.
Well, have either of you gentlemen ever been to inauguration?
Oh, yes. All right,
Terry has. Garland,
I go all the way back to Jimmy Carter.
I was going to suggest that Terry was at Lincoln's inauguration.
I was, in fact. I wrote the inauguration speech, as a matter of fact, for that. I didn't want to take credit for that right now. But
So, Garland, you've never been...
I was the one who came up with the correct three words for the 13th Amendment, but that was in my earlier life.
Good for you. Garland, you've never been to inauguration once in person.
I've never been to an inauguration, no.
Oh, my God. He's afraid of the cold. All right, Terry.
No, I'm thinking when they start having them in July is when I'll show up.
Yeah, you don't even show up for July 4th on the mall. I know you. You hate your country.
With climate change, there really won't be much of a difference between July and January anyway.
You just have no patriotism, Garland, whatsoever, apparently. Well, Terry, tell us about your first inauguration. Jimmy Carter, huh? Tell us about it.
Well, he walked, if you recall.
That's true.
Instead of rode.
That's true.
Which was really kind of neat. It was very hard to see him at that point when he walked up to the White House, but because the crowds were very thick. And... it was a pretty moving experience at the time. And if you remember the circumstances, it was after Gerald Ford, after good old President Nixon. And
hey.
Yes.
Lots of Nixon references. I can get a little touchy about that.
Yeah. And sorry, Garland.
Garland, you didn't change your name, so you have no excuse.
Yes, he did, as a matter of fact. His name used to be Schwarzenegger. And he changed it.
I thought Garland's name used to be Richard, and he changed it to Garland.
Yeah, that's true. Great.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So tell us, Terry, were you actually on the parade route, or were you watching on the mall?
No, I was on the parade route.
Okay, so you didn't actually see the oath of office and the speech. Actually, Jimmy Carter, as I recall, I know historically that Carter and I believe all presidents before him were on the other side of the Capitol, the north side, the side not facing the mall, and Ronald Reagan is the one who decided to turn it around.
Well, actually, they in case people don't know this historically, but they turned the Capitol around.
That's
what they did, so that it would face the right direction.
I
was also, unfortunately, at George Bush's inauguration.
The 2001?
The 2001.
I was there, too. Do you remember? There were more protesters than there were people supporting him.
But I unfortunately was stuck with some Republican friends.
What?
Yeah.
You have Republican friends?
Three.
You?
Three Republican friends. Yes.
Are you sure they're your friends?
They kidnapped me. They took me inside. I didn't get to kiss George Bush's hand or spit on it for that matter. But I was
inside
there.
Inside
what?
You said they took.
I
you
don't
inside.
Know. Somewhere in the Capitol.
Really?
Yep.
You were in the Capitol during the inauguration?
Well, after the speech.
After the speech. Okay.
Yeah.
So you saw the speech?
Yep.
I was in 2000. That was my first inauguration. And, of course, I came to Washington after writing the brief challenging the Florida electors. So I wasn't too pleased that Al Gore, the guy that Americans elected, was not going to be our president. So I came to protest. And there was an amazing amount of people protesting. It was a huge crowd. We were actually, and this is, I don't know, I think it's unprecedented in American history, there were more protesters than supporters out there.
Do you think that'll happen this time?
No, I don't think it'll ever happen again unless there's another stolen election.
I don't know. The right wing is angry.
What are they protesting? Look, if they don't like Obama's policies, that's one thing, but they don't dispute that he was elected.
They have no respect for the presidency. They have no respect for government.
Oh, yes, they do. They respect the presidency when Republicans win.
That's right.
Well,
okay.
And let's face it, Terry, the right wing has been angry since the mid-1860s, if you really want to get down to it.
Yeah.
That's when things started going downhill for them.
You could argue earlier, actually.
Yeah, you certainly can, yeah.
But so I was there, and I remember that they corralled us. Maybe someone will call in if you have memories of your inauguration experiences at 202-889-9797. I'm let the two of you talk amongst yourselves for a little while. I have a call from Beijing. I'll explain when I get back. But the two of you, please continue.
All right. There's
hey, Carolyn. Since Mark is gone, why don't we just take over?
Yeah, well, now that Mark's out of the way, I think we can actually accomplish something and have an intellectual conversation for a change.
Oh, no, we're going to go for intellect?
Yeah, right. Very interesting comment I read about that I wanted to ask you about. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton, I don't know if you read it, Bill Clinton has made some statements lately showing that he has some hesitancy about gun control measures. I don't know if you've read about it. If anyone who's listening, it's worth your while to Google it or look it up. Bill Clinton said something to the effect of, you know, this is a touchy cultural issue. And he showed, basically his statement showed that were he president, he'd be reticent to move in the area, move towards gun control. He really showed a lot of, I don't know if you wanted fear, hesitation, like this was an issue that he was concerned about. What are your thoughts on that?
I'll tell you, you know, the more I study history, the more I am aware that events other than unexpected events, which, you know, it caused a change in everybody's policy, but events that occur in government and between nations really have as much to do with the individual who's in charge, or the individuals who are in charge, their own particular ego, their own desire to stay in power. And I think more than anything else, particularly for a president or a king or anybody who's, you know, really in control, not in control necessarily, but in charge of the government, the executive branch anyway, retaining that power is everything. It really is everything. And I'm not insulting anybody by saying that. I'm just saying I think that is the fact of the matter. Nobody gets to be president unless they really, really want to be president, and they don't want to let it go. And if that means they have to avoid certain issues, such as nationalized health care, they will avoid certain issues to stay in power.
Gentlemen, I am back. I am done cavorting with the Chinese. They have wanted me to comment on the inauguration. So, but I am back, and just wanted to let
Garland
you know
and
that.
I were just getting started.
I understand. Yeah. I understand.
That I don't know if you read. Bill Clinton made some statements about gun control, and basically, to sum it up, his statements pretty much said, if I were president, I'd be hesitant to move on gun control. It's a touchy cultural issue, et cetera. Those weren't the exact words, but that's kind of the summation of it.
You know,
so, where were you, Terry?
I think that Obama is being careful. I mean, look, there are certainly many liberals who'd like him to go a lot farther. But to me, I've been doing a lot of shows on guns since Newtown. And the issue of background checks, what I find amazing on that, it's not just that 90 to 95% of Americans support background checks, but 80% of gun owners and 70% of NRA members support background checks. That's the least controversial one. And I think that to answer Bill Clinton's concern, he should just do it piecemeal. Do a bill on background checks and only background checks. And then do another bill on restricting the ammunition in the magazines to 10 bullets per. And then another one on the assault weapons. And again, I hope all three pass, but rather than pose them all together and give the Republicans a chance to vote down the package, I say do it piecemeal, because I don't see how anyone can really refuse, unless you're completely crazy, the idea that crazy people should own guns.
But
I think that could pass Congress.
In that regard, I mean, the thing that frankly worries me a little bit is the whole gun issue now has again become ideological.
Yep.
It doesn't have anything to do with common sense. It doesn't have anything to do really with person has the right to bear arms or not. They want to have, of course, the right to bear any arm they can think of and get their hands on, any ammunition that they can get their hands on. And it has become ideological, and they are making a heck of a lot of noise. I suspect there will be protests at the inauguration. And I suspect, and I worry, that we will not get a single bill through unless President Obama is very strong, but in a very positive way.
Well, and I would say, let me throw this in there, too. I'm with you, Terry. I suspect, I've made the point, I don't think we're going to get anything through. I think that, and keeping, you know, while the NRA, they say that they represent gun owners, they represent the gun industry. That's where they get their money from, and that's who they're answering to. But I don't think we're going to get anything through either, and I agree. What happens is, and it's not just gun control. What has happened now is that any issue that's brought up, no matter how minute, no matter how infinitesimally small, the right blows it into this big, they're going to come, the helicopters are going to come get you, they're going to order, take your guns, take your children, eat your family, you know. So it's turned into anything that the left, the president, the Democrats, any position that they take, it's, they are inherently evil. these people are socialist and they want to kill us all and they want to turn us into, you know, whatever. They want to turn us into, you know, the 1950s Russia. And that's not just guns. You know, we can't pass a bill anymore that says the sun shines on a Tuesday morning.
It's really tragic.
I mean, you know, and this whole thing of kicking the, you know, the debit issue down, kicking the can down the road again. I mean, it's just a perfect
example. You have to use that metaphor. That's the most overused metaphor in politics. That can is so kicked.
I've never overused a metaphor before, and I'll try not to ever again.
Got so many dents in it that I think the can is basically disintegrated. I want to disagree with both of you. Because I think that if Obama is careful, he can actually get some, maybe not all, but some of the gun measures he wants. And you're absolutely right, Garland, that the NRA works for the gun manufacturers. But I want you to think about this. Licensed gun dealers is the word I meant to use. Licensed gun dealers right now are required to do a background check. Which means if you go down to, you know, your gun store and you buy a gun, they have to do a background check. But 40% of all guns are sold without a background check in gun shows or private sales or things like that. Of the 40% that are sold without the background check, I guess there's no surprise, 80% of all crimes are committed with those 40% of guns. Again, I don't think that should surprise anyone. My point is this. Licensed gun dealers, the ones who support the NRA, are in a situation where they have to follow more regulations than the other guy. It's kind of like a doctor who the doctor says they license the doctors and they say, I'm sorry, you can only give out certain drugs and can't give out other drugs. They're restricted. But if you're not a doctor, you can give out all the drugs you want, arsenic, cyanide, whatever you want. So I actually think there's an incentive just on background checks, not on the ammunition, which is a harder question, although one I think is necessary. There's an incentive for even the licensed gun dealers to say, hey, if we have to abide by these rules, everyone should have to. So, again, I think if he separates the bills, one bill on background checks, a separate bill on the magazines, and a separate bill on assault weapons, I think at least background checks might just pass this Congress, but maybe I'm an incurable optimist.
You're an incurable optimist.
Yeah.
We love you for it. You know, there is medication available. I just wanted you to know that. The reality, though, is not what law is passed. The reality is what can and cannot be enforced. Did you guys see The Daily Show last week?
I did. It was great.
It was phenomenal. But the whole idea that, you know, that the ATF, alcohol, tobacco, and firearms, has been totally castrated.
Yeah.
And there is, and by one particular congressman who snuck in, amendments.
Tiert is his name.
I'm sorry?
Tiert from Colorado.
Who?
I think his name is Tiert, T-I-A-H-A-R-T. Hold on, we got a caller.
Yeah.
Caller went away.
It is.
Hey, caller,
he has destroyed, you know, and that's the real issue. Can anything be enforced? And with that kind of amendment, what's going to be enforced even if it's passed?
We had a caller on the line, and they went away. But if you want to call back, caller, it's 202-889-9797. Go ahead, Terry.
That show revealed so much, and it was an excellent show, and I encourage anybody that hasn't seen it to go on YouTube or on the Internet and see The Daily Show on that. I mean, the ATF has been totally castrated. It's almost an powerless agency. The whole idea, you know, the Republican say just the NRA says enforce the laws that already exist. The point is they aren't allowed to enforce any of the laws. They have been denied the right to do that in every significant area, including registration.
So here's what the Daily Show showed.
And if you look at it bit by bit, it's been clandestine. They'd have a bill that had something to do with, you know, national parks or something, and they'd tack or something and slip in there that said the ATF can't ask fire. The ATF cannot ask firearms dealers to give them a list of their inventory.
That's right.
They can't require them to keep, even though the law says they're supposed to, the ATF can't say, hey, you have to, and we're going to prosecute you if you don't. So a firearms dealer can have a million guns, and the ATF can say, how many do you have? They can say, well, I've got one. And say, all the rest are criminals. And
the whole thing is absurd.
Here's what the Daily Show.
Basically, in reality, we have no gun restrictions in the United States. Any semblance of any gun restriction is totally usurped by either some law or some rule or regulation that prohibits the NRA
from being able to... Did you guys see the video?
Yeah, I saw it. I saw it.
But did you see the video also of the woman speaking for the
ATF? I was just going to talk about that.
And the fact that, you know, gun owners are not forbidden from selling guns to a raving drunk.
Here's what was so funny about that. So the woman comes on the air from the ATF, and it's like a public service message, and she's like, you know, gun dealers, you may not want to sell guns to someone who is high on drugs and drunk as can be. Now, admittedly, I can't do anything about it if you do. The law cannot punish you if you do. It's not illegal. But
it
may
be a sign that says death to America.
But it may be unwise. She's
I mean,
so please, guys.
Except it's tragic, because the reality is, if there are no gun laws at all,
if you're a bartender, remember, and a guy is obviously drunk at a bar, if you serve him another drink, you can get in trouble legally because that person might drive home drunk and the victim sue you. But if you have a gun, that's fine. So if you're a bartender, you see someone very, very drunk, don't give them any more Jack Daniels. You can get in trouble. Just hand them an AR-47.
Yeah, sir, if the guy says, can I get another shot of vodka? No, sir, I'm sorry, that would be irresponsible. Well, can I buy an AK-47 or an AR-15? No problem.
No problem. That's exactly right.
You guys shouldn't have mentioned this now. Now, half the bars in Texas are going to be selling guns by tomorrow.
Well, guess what, sir? If that happens, that'll be half as many as are selling them today.
Right.
Oh, my God.
It's really kind of out of control, and, you know, somehow or other, you know, President Obama, in this inaugural address, has to address this. I mean, he can't do it with too much of a tack, because that's just going to backfire, but somehow or other, he's got to, in a positive way, address this issue that the ATF has been castrated, the American people, for that matter, in terms of what they want, have been castrated.
Well, and what he has, it's interesting, because what the president has on his side are the numbers. When you start looking at the polls and the number of people that believe in background checks and all of the various things that the president supports, he's going with the numbers. Overwhelmingly, the people support it. And so what we're seeing once again is a country in which people want something, whatever it is, rules, regulations, laws, restrictions. However, the people in power, the corporate people, the corporations, the big money, the big lobbyists, control the political process so much so that the corporations and the corporate money can get what they want. And I don't care if 99% of Americans polled want something, they can't get it anymore.
You're asking for the silent majority to stand up, by God.
Yeah, well, that ain't happening. That's why we call them silent. They won't stand. They won't even talk. God knows we can't get them to put out a little bit of energy and actually stand. They're on their knees.
But I got to say something.
We got to get them off their knees first.
For 4 years, we've had appalling gun violence. I mean, much more than even 4 years before and 4 years before that. I mean, one after the other. Virginia Tech was already 5 years ago, but just last year we have Arizona and the shooting of Gabby Giffords and a dozen other people. 2 months later, you know, Aurora, Colorado, a crazy person, both, by the way, with massive amounts of firepower. Hold on. We finally actually do have our caller on the line, I believe. Caller, you're on the Raucous Caucus with Mark, Terry, and Garland. Who's this?
Hey, Mark. It is Michael S.W. from the Bronx, New York City.
Hey, Michael. How are you? What's your comment on this discussion?
Well, I don't want to add two things to this. First off, let's play it straight here. That the NRA wants to keep saying that Obama's going to take your guns. He's trying to take your guns away.
Right.
Let's face facts here, and this is simple logic, simple common sense. If President Obama wanted to take the guns away, he would not, nor anybody in his cabinet would not have come up with a several-point plan for reform. That's the key word, reform. They would have just taken the guns away. You know, why waste time on a plan to reform gun violence and try to reform gun safety while at the same time being very mindful of the Second Amendment.
Including 23 separate plans, including things like having studies to study gun violence. Really things that you wouldn't think are that extraordinary. Nominating a guy to run the ATF, as we talked about. So you're absolutely right about that.
You know, there's been no head of the ATF for 6 years.
And it's crazy. It's then, just crazy. And the guy as John Stewart pointed out, the guy that's acting head of the ATF prior to Obama's nomination is also a U.S. attorney out of Minnesota, so it's not even his full-time job.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, logic isn't in the equation. I mean, you know, Michael, I'm sorry, but there's just not logic involved in this again. This is ideology that we're fighting.
Exactly. Yeah.
Go ahead and make your second point, Michael.
That's the point, Terry. That's the powerful point here, and that is where we get mixed up on the left. You know, on the left, I suggest that more people on the left read George Lakoff. There's a great book, and Mark and I interviewed the author, Chris Mooney, called "The Republican Brain." And one of
that's
the
an
things that
moron.
But one
or
of
just
the,
a
it's
moron
a great book because it gets into it that on the left, we tend to argue logic. And on the right, they argue idealistic arguments that have nothing to do with, you know, they're going to take your guns.
It's emotion,
well,
they argue.
In that.
It's emotion.
Reason, but it's not designed, the argument is not formed based on logic. It's formed based on the theory that if you activate emotions such as fear and anger, then you can get people to do what you want. So from the left, we try to use logic. Well, guess what? Fear and anger are much more powerful than logic. Fear is what you use to stay alive. Anger, initially, is what people use to survive. So we go back with logic. I'm sorry, you're fighting a losing battle. If you've got an angry person and you start logically saying, well, you really shouldn't be angry, they're going to punch you in the face. So we've got to change our argument and recognize that what they're doing is not logical. It's emotional. And I would argue that we have to start mixing our arguments more with emotion and less with logic, because let's face it, we're not winning with logic.
I think Obama's
exactly
done
right,
that.
That's true in any discussion.
Well,
and, you know, Obama has the chance to do that in the inaugural address, and the power behind that is exactly what happened at Sandy Hook and not letting us forget what happened.
But see, I think he's done that. When he did his proposals, what did he do?
Yes.
He surrounded himself with children. Many from Newtown, many wrote him letters about guns. And the first time Obama uses emotion, the Republicans go crazy. Oh, my God, he had children in the White House, and they wrote him letters, and that's not fair. They got so upset that Obama was using the emotional power of
that's
children.
That's okay. It resonates with the people.
Of course
it does. Yeah, because they know it works. That's the problem.
Exactly. Michael, real quick, make your last point.
Yeah, and gentlemen, that is why we are all having this discussion, to debunk that those sets of lies, because we were successful when Bush was in office. He kept using the fear-mongering of 9-11, 9-11, 9-11, and people have had it up to here, and they started realizing and listening to reason, and when you listen to reason, that's when truth comes out. And the thing with the NRA, I would love to interrogate them, because they keep going on the airwaves saying that Obama is trying to take your guns. They've attack the Obama children. They go against the will of the people. The people are saying they want gun control or gun reform to end the gun violence, and they totally debunk the idea of more guns, more guns, more guns. The NRA lost on the last elections because I know they were counting on Romney and Republicans to win to continue their agenda. So what is your game, NRA? Is it that you are so defiant of this president, you are so defiant of the people who elected him not once but twice, and both in landslides, I might add, you're so defiant of the rights of the people of the majority that since you know full well that you cannot take away our rights of free speech, our rights to stand up for safety, for truth and justice, that the only way you think you're going to beat us into annihilate us with all these guns and your idea of trying to use the mentally ill to get the guns, why is it you're so much against the background check?
I'll tell
why
you something, so Michael.
I mean, what Obama has got to say, you know, the only thing we have to fear is fear itself, and there are some fear mongers working.
Absolutely.
And that's when I come in to put a stop to it.
I'll tell you, Michael, I invited a representative of the NRA to come on several of my shows.
Oh, yeah.
Several times. And I called them and I emailed them and I gave them all the information, and guess what? They didn't show up. Thank you for your call, Michael. I always appreciate
always
your participation.
Yeah,
and they can't show up, Mark. They can't show up, Mark. And the reason is because you're going to say things that are going to hold them accountable for their positions, and they don't want to be held accountable. It's just like Rush Limbaugh never has You know, he'll never have someone on his show to argue against him because he'll be held accountable for his positions. They just want to be able to say anything they want, that, and they know they can't defend the things because they're not based on any reasonable argument.
They don't even try.
Hey, look, let me tell you something. See that guy over there? He's scary, and he's going to do scary things to you, and you should be scared. And people say, holy crap, I am kind of scared. There you go. Do what I'm telling you to do, and to save yourself so you won't be. I mean, if you boil down their arguments, that's all it would be. You should be very afraid, and you should be angry. You should be afraid of this guy, and you should be angry at this guy. And I don't care what he's doing. Let's not get into the details of what he's doing.
Did you notice that the NRA...
It's bad. You should fight against it.
When the NRA had a so-called press conference, they said they had a press conference. They invited all the press to come in, and in their press conference, they made a statement and answered no questions, which to me is not a press conference. That's a speech. But they didn't bill it as a speech, but Wayne LaPierre, the head of the NRA, did not want to answer any questions. And a lot of people in the press were pretty upset because they thought it was a press conference.
Guys, I want to introduce something here that I suspect is going to surprise you, and you can check it out on the web. It's pretty easy to check out. There have not been these kind of sole one-person massacres in our history before. You can go back to, something like 61 E.D., 61 C.E., Common Era, and check the whole list of massacres, almost all massacres in the past, right up until very, very recently in our country and the world, have been done because of political movements, because of kings, mm-hmm. because of military, because of armies, right. because of religious classes, racial clashes, etc. There's not been the capability for one person to do a massacre until quite recently.
That's interesting.
And the first one in the United States, the first one was in 1966 at the University of Texas, and that was not with assault rifles, but it was with military rifles. Then there was nothing until 1991, some 30 years, almost 25 years later, before there's another massacre by one person, and that's Luby's Restaurant, if you remember that one, where 22
right, yeah.
people were killed. Then there was one in 1993 in Palatine, Illinois, one in, there was the Waco thing, but that was really the ATF and the FBI doing the shooting.
Right.
The Oklahoma City, of course, bombing,
right.
but, you know, Littleton, then Seattle, then Virginia Tech, then
Columbine.
Fort Hood, then Tucson,
yeah. Yeah.
then Aurora, then Sandy Hook. This is all within the last 20 years.
And it's coming faster and faster. The pace is increasing. You know,
yes.
you go 25 years, then you go 3 years, then 2 years, then 1 year, and now it's every couple months.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Every couple months.
Not only has there been a huge cultural change that we have to address, but the simple availability of these kind of guns that allow one person to kill 20 or 30 people.
Gentlemen, we need to take a quick break, but hold that thought. We'll get right back with you. If you want to call in, please do so, 202-889-9797. This is Mark Levine, Terry DeKester, and Garland Nixon. We'll be right back right after this. Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. This is Mark Levine with Garland Nixon and Terry DeKester. The President of the United States has just been re-inaugurated in the ceremony that actually is the only one that counts under the Constitution, the one that occurs every 4 years on January 20th at 12 noon. And then tomorrow he's going to do it all over again in a public ceremony with pomp and circumstance and bands and a million people. He's going to take the oath again, and that one won't matter at all. It'll just be a show because today is Sunday, and when it happens on Sunday, the tradition is to always do the inauguration on Monday. We're talking about all the challenges for President Obama that are coming up in his second term. We've been talking a lot about guns, but of course there are others. If you want to dial in, it's 202-889-9797, 202-889-9797. So, gentlemen, let me ask you something. I don't this tradition, all right, I get it, back when Sunday's church day and so forth. To me, the weekend, I would think that in the future, 28 years from now, when the inauguration, January 20th, falls on a Sunday again, they should just do it on the Sunday. I mean, you'll get more crowds, won't you?
I suppose so, but you right there, the religious right will
yeah.
go berserk.
But big deal. It's on Sunday. We do everything on Sunday
hey, you,
right
you think
now.
We have separation of church and state? You're not paying attention.
Yeah, I agree. And you know, let me ask you this. What do you think, you know, the right and Fox News will do? It's on a Sunday. It's the war on the church, Christianity, Jesus, yeah, right. blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Church is over by noon, right? Isn't church over by noon in most cases?
Yeah, but everybody's going to be, it's just another, you know, just another reason. And tomorrow's a holiday. It's Martin Luther King's birthday.
Well, that's true. That's true. So people are off anyway. By the way, that's kind of interesting. So Martin Luther King's birthday is, of course, the third Monday. And it's just, maybe it'd be every 7 years. You know what? It'll be interesting. Maybe from now on, not I didn't think about this, but every single time there is a Sunday on January 20th, Monday will be the 21st. It'll be Martin Luther King's birthday. So actually, from now into the future, Martin Luther King's birthday will always allow us to have a holiday off, a day off during inauguration when it falls on a Sunday.
Hey, I have a question to throw out to you guys.
Yeah.
They're coming to get you.
You got an ambulance behind you too.
Yeah, well, no, actually, I'm actually involved in a high speed chase even as we speak.
Okay, well, I assume you're using one of your constitutionally protected AR-47s.
Yeah, well, they're all in the trunk.
Okay,
I suspect that's why they're after me.
Shooting out the window.
Back to my somber notes.
Yes,
I'm worried, guys. In a way, I'm not worried. Nothing. Concerned. I really fear, based on everything that's going on, that tomorrow during the inauguration, and I'm not saying in D.C., somewhere, somehow, some nutcase is going to try to do something to make his point or their point or how angry they are at the government or something like that. I have a fear, a healthy concern of, I have no idea what, but of something happening that's negative to, you know, someone who's, you know, trying to allegedly, you know, fight back against the oppressive government. What say you guys? Am I out in, you know, am I way out in left field? Am I crazy with that concern or fear? What do you guys think?
You're off schedule is the only problem. I don't think anything will happen prior to the inauguration, and probably not happen while the gun control, what an oxymoron that is, while any gun legislation is before Congress, because they know that would only empower them. But once this dies down, which it'll die down as we get again close to the physical cliff, or as we get closer to that, everybody will forget about all those kids killed. And once it dies down, you're going to see more and more violence, of course, because it's in our culture. The weapons are available. There's more weapons and ammunition available ever. I guarantee you're going to see shopping malls. You're going to see sporting events shot. You're going to see in movie theaters, probably hospitals. It's going to continue because it's a sick way of an individual to express themselves at enormous cost to society.
I'll tell you something. I have great respect for the Secret Service and for, frankly, the people monitoring the inauguration. I was there 4 years ago. If anything, there was an excess of security. I don't see anything happening. I'm going to be there on the mall. So I really don't see any danger for those of you in D.C. going down. It's going to happen somewhere, Garland. See, that presumes that there are people that sort of want to disrupt the presidential inauguration through guns. But I think they know, as Terry said, if that happens, there will be very successful gun regulation. I think it's more a problem of someone with a screw loose, someone who's is not quite right in the head, taking these very powerful weapons.
Is it the president of the NRA?
Well, he's got a different screw loose.
Describe the Tea Party.
Yeah,
well,
right.
I don't think if it's a political thing, I think they know that if they do something on Inauguration Day, then it's really gun regulation is going to come down pretty hard on their heads. So I think it's much less likely to be a political thing and more likely to be the mentally ill, which we have among us, which every culture has amongst them, someone getting these very powerful weapons. And really, it is the gun killing the people, not the person, because the person wouldn't kill anyone or wouldn't kill very many if all they had were a knife. So,
well, you know, then again, you know, even like, you know, Timothy McVeigh and stuff like this.
That was
you
political.
Know, what you're saying makes sense. But these crazy militias and people like that, they don't make sense. A lot of times they choose, for instance, they do some, what was it? Was it Timothy McVeigh? Was that Hitler's birthday? One of them was Hitler's birthday.
I think it was, actually.
Or the day that of the Waco or the Ruby Ridge,
right.
You know, incident, you know, they do something. Or they, a lot of times these terrorists, which is what they are.
Of course they are.
The Libya thing on the date of 9/11. People choose like this. Are not logically concerned with the political ramifications of what they're doing. They pick a day that signifies something, and whatever their act, they feel that that is more so an expression of what they're trying to
but,
say.
But, Garland, I don't believe there's any inauguration in American history, dating back to our first, where there's ever been such an incident. So, I mean, history says that, of course, it can always be a first time, but
that was the thing.
Let's not give anyone ideas. All right, if you're listening to this station,
yes, leave the country immediately.
Please, yes. Shoot yourself. All right,
I do have that concern. I don't know. Maybe I'm the only person in the country who has that concern.
It's going to happen one way or the other. I agree with you, that Garland. I'm not sure when, but I agree one way or the other. It's going to happen. It's going to happen again and again. I just wanted to correct one thing, guys. That congressman, the Republican congressman, was from Kansas.
Tears.
Todd Tyart. T-I-A-A-R-T.
I got his name right, his state wrong.
Yeah, and
right.
2003 and 2004 is when he castrated. And everybody voted it in. I mean, all the senators and everybody else voted, too, to allow it. You know, I want to ask you guys a question. Now, one of the things that annoys me the most is everybody makes it axiomatic that the Second Amendment does say you can have guns.
And of course it doesn't.
5-4 decision to begin with.
Right.
There were really good arguments against, you know, the ruling. That the lead on, of course, the ruling was by good old Anton Scalia. Talk about a nut job. And I don't want to get into a discussion of what the Second Amendment means so much, but is there a way that we can get it reviewed in the court?
Oh, we need one of those five justices to retire and a new justice to be appointed. That's all we need. It's all about the individual. From 1791, when the Second Amendment became part of our Constitution, until 2008, that's, do my math, 217 years. For 217 years, the Second Amendment never invalidated a single statute in the United States. That's an important point. For 217 years, there were gun regulations, and they were upheld by the courts. And they were upheld by the courts largely. There's this Miller decision because they said, hey, you know, this is to protection for militias, and you're right. You can have well-regulated militias, but you can't just have any guns you want. Only in 2008, by a very thin majority, i.e. one vote, Scalia managed to throw away the originalism. He's supposed to be a strict constructionist, but what Scalia said is the first 13 words of the Second Amendment were an oops. The founders mean it. They wrote it down, but when they wrote it down, they knew it was completely empty words, and our founders were apparently so empty-headed that the majority of words of the Second Amendment have no meaning whatsoever. Ignore those. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. Just look at the words we want to talk about. And the irony is that it was Scalia that was doing it. Scalia, who claims to care about the actual literal language of the Constitution, completely throwing it out to put in his political views.
And
say, you know, whether it's militia or individual, it does say well regulated.
That's right.
Yes.
Well regulated. That means laws.
Yep.
That means, yes, significant laws. But, you know, the other part of it is this. The other ironic thing is that those who, on the far right, who claim to be, you know, to cling to the Constitution, are the most anti-democracy people.
Oh,
they're the most anti-democratic extremists. Recently, I don't know if you guys know, that some sheriff from somewhere out west, I don't know if it was Oregon or wherever, but he said that he refused that in the event that there were new gun laws that he felt that he believed that was unconstitutional.
Bigger than that, Garland.
Right.
Just
he would not enforce it. But my point being this, what he's really saying is this, and then all these right-wing people said, we're all about. What he's really saying is this. We have a democratic process which decides what is and isn't constitutional. As long as things fall the way I think they should fall, then I'm going to abide by the democratic process. Now, in the event that they don't go the way I think they are, I'm going to name myself Chief Justice of the Supreme Court, and I'm going to determine what is or isn't constitutional. The reality of that is what's being demonstrated is these people actually are extreme. As is well noted in history for fascists, these people I use that term lightly, but the reality is it's well documented that fascists are anti-democratic, and I'm not saying they are fascists, I'm just throwing that in there. What they're saying is, I don't have any respect for democracy unless it gives me the results that I want, which really means I have no respect whatsoever for democracy.
Yeah, you got to understand this is much bigger, and again, it's part of the ideology, and it's important. I hate to say it, but I think that thing about not enforcing gun legislation if it's passed, sheriff saying it started here in good old Oregon. There's 8 counties here in Oregon that have, sheriffs have already pledged not to enforce any laws that are passed. This is true, and it's spread to it's Colorado, Kentucky, Mississippi, Alabama. It's all over the United States that sheriffs are doing this. And that is ideology, and that is insanity, and that does lead to fascism.
Terry, let me ask you about your state, because Oregon is an interesting state. It is a blue state. It has voted for the Democratic president for at least 5-6 elections. It is a state, I believe, where the western half is heavily blue, Portland and so forth, and then the east is extremely red. It's a lot like Idaho, which it borders. How is it that Oregon, I mean, the majority, I would think, even if it's just comes from the west, that's where all the people live, they're Democrats. Why can't Oregon pass a law to require, I mean, this is state law. They can require the sheriffs to take away the guns, and if they don't, then they can fire the sheriffs, but it would have to be Oregon doing it. Why isn't your state doing that?
This is that's a very good question, and it's part of the reason that I am, frankly, concerned, for the nice safe word, as I am. What has happened in Oregon, and it's been amazingly quick, is, again, the same right-wing tactics that have been applied everywhere else in the country. It took a bit longer here, but it is like just here in our local county, the only new councilman to the county are all Tea Party Republicans. The same idea of fear has been planted and used again and again and again. And my point is, it's working, and it's working rapidly. So this blue state that voted for Obama, in every other extreme or issue, is going to the right very rapidly. It's scary.
But it just but the right is outnumbered, aren't they, in Oregon? Aren't there more people in Portland?
The Republican right is outnumbered. The NRA is outnumbered, as you've pointed out.
Yeah.
You know, the American people do want legislation. The NRA members want legislation. But the fear is what works, and so it works in two ways. One, no candidate has the guts to stand up to it because he knows he's not going to get elected because so much fear is going to be created. And the fear begins to permeate everybody, and they start pulling back to actively protest this insanity.
And Mark, we go back to what, you know, some of the speeches and some of the talk that Dr. King gave about, you know, a minority of people who are overzealous and highly motivated versus the majority who are fairly ambivalent and a minority on the other side who are somewhat motivated. So you have a highly motivated minority, but you have all of these people sitting in the middle not doing anything who are basically complicit with that overzealous minority. And that's what that whole Tea Party movement is about, a small group of people who make a hell of a lot of noise, group of people in the middle. You're right, a huge group of people in the middle who don't agree with them but don't really feel like doing much other than sitting on their butts looking at TV.
Well, it's not just sitting on their butts, they're scared.
But this is
they're literally scared.
This is where our reelected president can make the difference. Like, President Obama, to his credit, to his discredit, did nothing about a war in Arizona. But to his credit, after Newtown, he didn't just give one very powerful emotional speech where he shed a tear, which actually I know he didn't plan it, but if he had planned it, I'd be fine with it because it's important the president shed a tear for what happened in Newtown. But he didn't just do that. He set up 23 executive actions. He set up his vice president, Joe Biden, to convene a commission to get together and come up with very specific proposals. And he keeps talking about it. I think a lot of people thought this would be something that would be a flash in the pan for a day or two. But given that the majority of Americans do support reasonable gun regulation, the only way to stop a committed minority with a loud voice is with a committed majority with an even louder voice. And it needs a leader. And the president so far is keeping up with that leadership. Now, we'll see. We'll see where it goes.
And that is the next 4 years very much will be determined by the American people. He will face unrelenting, vicious attacks from the right because, number one, I think he's going to be stronger about more progressive policies than he had the first 4 years. But the question is going to be, everyone else out here, do we counteract the pressure from the right, or do we sit around like the first 4 years with our hands in our pockets saying, where's that change I ordered?
Yeah. And the main thing we've got to do is we've got to encourage Obama, and I really mean that as an activist movement, because he's probably, as Mark was saying, the primary hope that we have. We have to the only way you can combat these guys is not by labeling them or attacking them, but by creating a hopeful message that contains the information that we want to contain, protecting the children, et cetera, but it's got to be hope-oriented. It's got to be a la Roosevelt, or it will not work.
Allah Roosevelt, is that the new Muslim god who was president for four terms? Almost.
Right. But I mean,
Never mind. Go ahead.
What Roosevelt did is he kept on projecting hope, no matter what the policy was, no matter how scary things were.
Happy
whether,
days
you know,
are here again.
Invaded or not.
No, that's true.
He kept on projecting hope.
In the midst of the recession.
Emotion.
Right.
Argument.
That's what hope
when
is.
Obama was running for president, he said hope. He said emotional things. And that's what motivates people. And I say again, on the left, we got to get away from all this policy wonky crap. And we use emotion. Our policies are based on values that are different from the right that people will support. And we got to use the emotion, and we got to talk about our values from an emotional perspective, and we will win and get away from all the wonky details.
Well, I now understand entirely why Obama didn't have greater success in his first term. Y'all have explained it. The whole answer to Obama's lack of success, he didn't have a good theme song.
Right.
That's the problem. Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in the midst of the Great Depression, had Happy Days Are Here Again. Bill Clinton had Thinking About Tomorrow. What he needs is a good theme song. And with that, I got to end the show. Thank you, gentlemen. We'll be back next week with more of the Raucous Caucus, Sunday at noon. See you then.
Bye, Mark.
Adios.